Eric's quiz, is there anybody still taking it?
So, I've got to catch up a little bit because I didn't allow myself enough time to follow the process. Alright, so I've been thinking there. Last time, basics, start off right here. So, alright. When you start to look at the appendicular skeleton, it is going to branch off your axial skeleton, which is mainly what it's trying to support. It is your appendages. So the pectoral girdle in this case looks very different for a lot of animals, but for humans, it's something you see in the lab, you've probably seen growing up, and it's probably used as an example here or there. Okay, so getting into the finer details, however, that's where it kind of gets hard. So you do have your clavicle. Your clavicle is a bone that allows for support. That is its primary function. It is going to allow you to articulate off of it and off of your sternum. In birds that dive, they use this with their sternum, so that way when they actually collide with the water, it doesn't rupture the joint, so it's something that's left to survival for them. Scapula. So your scapula allows for muscle attachment and allows for range of motion. Okay? It does move. You can feel it when you shift your arm up. You can feel your scapula move. A lot of what you're feeling motion-wise, however, is muscles. Okay? The humerus itself is not very humerus when you hit your funny bone. Your funny bone is usually referred to as the olecranon process. Okay, the olecranon process is on the back of your ulna. Okay, your radius allows for the rotational motion of your forearm. Okay, that's when you look at it, you'll see with the capitulum that when you rotate, it is actually just spinning on the capitulum. Okay, that's what allows for that rotational motion. You also have your carpal bones, which I've told you don't need to memorize, but you need to know the carpals, metacarpals, and the phalanges. You should also know in your foot, your tarsal bones, your metatarsals, and your phalanges. Okay? Alright. So, you should also be able to name the joints. If you notice, the joints are fairly self-explanatory. If you know the bones, you can almost come up with the joint names for most joints. Okay? They tend to be named off of a mashup of the two words. Okay? So, sternum, clavicular, clavicle. Okay? Sternoclavicular joint, and then you have your acromion clavicular joint. So if you know it's attaching, in this case your clavicle is going to articulate off of your acromion process on your scapula. Okay? So your clavicle in this picture, they say it looks straight. I don't think the clavicle really looks straight from any direction, in my personal opinion. Okay? It's always got a little bit of a curve. But your clavicle, it is S-shaped, okay? It does have a sternal end and it has an acromial end. The sternal end is blunt, it is flat. So if I was to set a clavicle out and ask you what joint is on this end of this bone, you should be able to say your sternoclavicle. Sternoclavicular, excuse me. Alright, so you do have a medial end and a lateral end also. Okay, I tend not to go there, but it is fair game. Okay, I could ask which one is actually going to be your medial end and which one is your lateral end. Tend not to go there though. There's more than enough with all of the lovely little processes and tubercles. That's where I tend to spend most of my time on practice.
I know you say these little like creases at very defined here, but the bone itself, and the like the line and the small little bones that come out.
If I can see.
Okay.
Let's put it this way, I don't like for y'all to come back and say, well, but that was really intricate. That was really hard to see. So if that's the case, I will line it in paint. Okay? I literally have done that where I will set two of the same bone out. One I will line it with tape and the other one I will not. So that way you can see it with and without tape. So I try to make it very clear. Okay. All right. So your conoid tubercle, if I can speak. Okay, conoid tubercle, I don't think that's on your list, but if it is, it's something you should know for lab. Okay. All right. So your manubrium, that is something you should know. Your manubrium is the top portion above the suture in your sternum. Okay. In this case, that is what you are going to have your clavicle actually articulating with. So that is where that sternoclavicular joint is, okay? On a practical, if I asked you what bone this was articulating with, you could say sternum, but you're correct. You could also say manubrium, but you're correct. Both would be correct in that case. Sternum is the full set of all three of the bones. And the manubrium is one piece of that. So, scapula. So, triangular bone, it's going to actually sit on the posterior superior rib cage. So, posterior behind you, superior above, at the top of your rib cage. Okay? You can feel it. This is where I start to tell you, you have a cheat sheet of your own called your body. I literally have seen it multiple times throughout the years where you will go, yeah, and then you write an answer. Okay? So, it seems stupid, but you have your own cheat sheet. Use it. Okay? All right. So, three borders. It is going to have a lateral, a medial, and a superior border. In other words, those are the edges, okay? Because it's triangular, you have three. Your coracoid process is a hooked-shaped projection on the anterior surface. It comes from the posterior superior portion and comes out anteriorly as a little hook. Okay, this allows for muscle attachment, which allows for movement of that scapula, okay? You are also going to have your subscapular fossa. So, your subscapular fossa, this is under the scapula. This is inferior to the coracoid process. It's going to provide an attachment site for the subscapularis muscle. So, sub meaning below. And so, it's under the scapula. It is deep to the scapula, is another way to say that. The glenoid cavity. It is going to be where you are going to articulate the head of your humerus, okay? The shallow indentation is found on the lateral surface of the lateral surface. It is what articulates the humerus. This is your shoulder joint, okay? If you pop your shoulder out of place, you are popping the head of your humerus out of the glenoid cavity, okay? So that's a dislocation. Spine, the spine of the actual scapula. This is what separates your infra and suprascapular muscle. So you have your supraspinatus, which is going to be above, it's superior, and you have your infraspinatus, which is below the spine. And this spine terminates and becomes the acromion process. Show you what I mean. So, this is your spine. It starts medially and it's going to move laterally. It is going to move superior laterally, so it is moving up at an angle. It terminates into your acromion process. In front of your chromium process, you're gonna have your coronoid process, or excuse me, coracoid process. Your coracoid process is going to be, it's gonna allow you to have motions forward, okay? Because what it's gonna do is it's gonna provide an articulation point for that muscle to pull forward, okay? All right, so you have your superior border, you have your lateral border, and you're gonna have your medial border, okay? The triangle goes in, okay? So the way your scapula actually sets up is the triangle cuts in. For some reason, and I'm guilty of this as a student too, you think it goes the other way for some reason. So make sure you understand, okay? Literally, I have seen students put it on the actual ribcage backwards, okay, and try to justify it. All right, so the body of the actual scapula is the main portion. It is the triangle, the central portion of the triangle. All right. So the humerus, you have your proximal epiphyses as a medial oriented ball-shaped humeral head. So the head means that the bone, after making this rounded ball, is going to indent in. So that is the limit of the head of the humerus. Same thing for the head of the femur, okay? At that point where it begins to taper in, that's the actual terminating point where it no longer is the head, okay? All right, the capitulum. So, capitulum is what, the way I've always heard it phrased, is it's what allows you to give different pitches, okay? The different spins. So, that's a way to remember it. The capitulum is a spherical knob, okay? It is at the distal end of your humerus. It is going to be where you are going to articulate your radius. Your radius will pivot off of that. And the ball with the actual rotational joint at the end of the radius allows it to rotate. Okay, where it gets its name, radius. Trochlea, so this is the spool-shaped knob. This is what keeps your ulna on track. This is what allows you to put a lot of speed into that joint. Because if you couldn't keep it on track, you would end up having a wobbly arm. Okay, you would end up going to do this, and instead of having a controlled reaction, you could end up hitting someone in the face instead of the chest. Okay, so without your trochlea, you would have guidance issues with your front lumbar three, four. Your olecranon fossa, so it is going to be deep indentation that is found on the posterior aspect of the distal epiphyses. Basically, this gives you relief for your olecranon process. Okay? Olecranon fossa, olecranon process. Okay? The deltoid tubercle, this allows for you to attach your deltoid muscle. Okay? Your deltoid muscle. It is called deltoid because it looks like a delta. The Greek letter delta is a triangle. Okay? It is a triangular muscle that sits over the top of your arm. Okay? Your medial and lateral epicondyles. So they provide attachment sites for muscles. Show you where they are. So it is medial and lateral is specific to whether it's right or left arm. Okay? So in this case, your medial epicondyle, it is always going to be next to your trochlear. So your trochlea is where your medial epicondyle is. And your capitulum is where your lateral condyle is. Okay? Because your radius is always going to be lateral to your ulna in anatomical position. Okay. So, let's see. All right, surgical neck. I don't tend to ever put anything on there that says surgical, but the Anatomical neck is what I would put on a test. Okay, a practical test, anything could be there. So you do have a greater tubercle and a lesser tubercle on your humerus. However, they are usually best seen and best exemplified in your femur. Okay, your actual greater and lesser tubercles are definitive in that case. All right. So, but either one's fair game for the test. All right. So, in this case, now we're looking at the joint between the two. So, this is your olecranon fossa, and this is your olecranon process being shoved in. Okay, so you can see how it would articulate here. You are also going to have, in this case, your pendulum, where your radius is going to articulate. Okay? The head of your radius, just below that, you're going to have the tapering, which is the neck of the radius. You have your radial tuberosity, which is another definitive marking on a bone. Your lateral and medial epicondyles, like I was saying, they're associated with specific articulation points for your two forearm bones. Okay? So, medial is going to be on your ulnar side, okay? Your lateral is going to be on your radial side. All right. So, bones of the forearm, both are going to articulate with the humerus proximally, okay? And with the carpal bones distally. They articulate with one another, both at proximal and distal radial ulnar joint. Your ulna is the medial bone in anatomical position, and your radius is the lateral bone. It is the thumb side, okay? That's what allows you to have that full rotation of your thumb, okay? It's because your radius is on that side. All right, so trochlear notch, U-shaped notch, articulates with the trochlea of the humerus. Your olecranon is going to be the large protrusion found in the posterior aspect of the trochlear notch. I refer to it as the olecranon process. However, if you just say olecranon of the bone, I will accept it. Okay? But I call it the olecranon process because that's what it's always been called, what I've seen. Anterior lip of the trochlear notch. This is the projection called the coronoid process. It is going to fit into the coronoid fossa of the humerus. The radius is the lateral bone. So the radial head is the rounded head. It is the one that is closest to your humerus. It articulates with your pendulum, I've said that multiple times now, and the radial styloid process at the lateral tip of the radius. Okay, so lateral end of the radius. Okay. You're going to form the lateral boundary of the wrist. It provides joint stability. So, in this case, you've got your radius, and with your radius, you have this radial styloid process. It makes it to where you can't move this direction. Okay? That's what provides that wrist stability. Okay? If you can move this way, you've probably either damaged this or you have genetic something like that. Okay? But that's what it's designed to do. The main reason why is because you want to try and provide some stability in this joint that you can do all of this with. Okay? Because if you can't pivot off of anything or hold anything in a position, it becomes problems later. Okay? All right. So, when you take and look at your actual ulna in a little more detail, this is your coronoid process, okay? This is your trochlear notch, and this is your olecranon, or as I call it, the olecranon process, okay? In humans, it is not large at all because it's designed for speed, okay? Other animals, this is really long, it looks like a process, okay? and it provides power. It depends on the animal and what they're doing. So if you wanted to go in and get an extension of your electronic process, you could have a lot more power in your forearm. Okay? Even a couple millimeters would make a difference. All right. So I'm going to go through this. I do not expect you to know it. Okay, so there are 8 short bones that are arranged in 2 rows containing 4 bones each. So in this case, you have this little ditty. Okay, the starting point is the row proximal to the radius. So it is closest to the radius. Under the thumb, you can memorize this in order. However, I'm telling you, you don't have to. Okay, so there's your scaphoid, your lunate because it looks like the loon. You have your trichotrum and your pisiform, your trapezium and your trapezoid, and then the pitate and the hamate. So all of these bones have these lovely names. They get them because of their shape typically. That's the main reason why or what they're associated with. So if for some reason you decide that you want to move into a field where this is important, you might want to know these, okay? If you're going into nursing, I suggest you go ahead and memorize them, okay? But for the purposes of this class, not going to go there directly, okay? All right, so here's each one of them highlighted so that way you can see exactly where it is located. All right, so your metacarpals, okay, they're number 1 through 5. You are also going to, beyond that, have your phalanges that are associated with a specific metacarpal, a proximal, middle, and distal phalanges. So, proximal, middle, distal, okay? Your metacarpals, if you notice, they start and they go in specific order. They go from your thumb, anatomical position, thumb in. Okay? So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It's fairly simple. That's something I think I could ask on a test if I needed to, but I don't think I have to. But it's there. So your thumb is also sometimes referred to as the pollex. It consists only of a proximal and distal phalange. So in this case, you are missing, bless you. You're missing your middle phalange. You do not have that as part of the bone structure for your thumb. Why? Well, more than likely, it's something to do with the fact, and this is pure speculation, more than likely it's to do something with you actually having to support a lot of weight with just one thing. Okay? So, if you look back evolutionarily, you're looking at animals that had to climb through trees. So this thumb was very important and had to be very stout. So that extra bone provided another place for something to break. All right, so bones of the pelvic girdle. So now we're going to the pelvis. It is formed by ossicoccygeal bones that articulate with the sacrum. So the sacrum is still a portion of your spine. However, there is this sacral joint. The sacral joint is going to be bound to your actual ilium. Okay? You need to know the 3 parts of the pelvis: ilium, ischium, and sacrum. Ilium, ischium, and pubis. It is composed of 3 fused bones. All are going to contribute to the acetabulum. The acetabulum is a deep socket where the head of your femur is going to go. The ilium and the pubis also contribute to the obturator foramen and opening in each coxal bone. This is a large opening that you see. Part of this is for certain anatomical things to pass through, primarily arteries, okay? So you're going to have nerves that also pass through this area. In this case, you'll know some of them once you get there. Okay. So this is a cross section, so you can see that this is your sacrum here. In this region, this is where you start to have just a few nerves coming down. You've already hit the point to where you've had your, caudate equina. So you've already hit the point to where you've hit the caudate equina. You have a pelvic outlet. This pelvic outlet is the birth canal. That's where babies pass through. You will have a cartilage structure right here that is going to be called your pubic symphysis. Your pubic symphysis, that cartilage structure when birth does begin, okay? During the actual process of birthing, there's a hormone called relaxin that is released that is meant to relax that cartilage to allow the two actual pubis to separate, the pubi to separate. In that case, that allows for the little bit of flex that you need to pass the child's head through.
What was the three parts called? The ilium, the pubis, and?
The ischium. They get two of them I names, just to be confusing. All right. So, you have your sacroiliac joint, okay? There's a joint I referred to earlier. You do have your sacrum in this case. The base of your sacrum is between the two iliac crests, the two iliac bones. Inside the iliac, you're going to have your iliac fossa. Your ilium, ischium, and pubis, you should generally know that in this case, your pubis is what connects to the pubic symphysis. Okay? Your ischium is the low slung portion, and your ilium is above because it has your iliac crest. Okay? All right. So your acetabulum, I don't like the way this picture shows it, but your acetabulum is this cavity here where the head of your femur will actually insert. You do have the pelvic brim, which is this circular region that's created here. Your coccyx is your tailbone. And these two bones, your pubis and your ischium, are going to create this obturator foramen. Okay, the obturator foramen is something I would know. All right, bones of the pelvic girdle. So the ilium forms superior portion of the coxal bones. The iliac crest is the superior border of the ala. This is the flared superior wing. So you can feel the iliac crest if you feel it around back here. Okay, be careful, don't press too hard because you're also in the neighborhood of your kidneys. Okay, that's why if you ever see UFC and you wonder why this guy is swinging and hitting the other guy right here in the side, part of the reason why is those are shots to the kidney. Okay? So, makes it to where it puts the other guy in quite a bit of pain. All right, or girl now that they have the women's league. Okay, so the anterior superior iliac spine is the bony projection found at the anterior end of the iliac crest. So, the aces, it is just inferior to, okay, so just inferior to that, you have the small ridge, the anterior iliac. Anterior inferior iliac spine. It's not. Okay, so the greater sciatic notch is a deep groove found inferior to posterior inferior iliac spine. Yeah. So, alright. It's where the sciatic nerve passes through. We'll just say that right there. So, the posterior inferior iliac spine is a bony ridge found at the posterior end of the iliac crest, just inferior to, yeah, we're gonna stop right there. So, all right, just know in general, the big things that I think you should know is your iliac crest and your greater sciatic notch, okay? You should know where those two are at. Everything else just becomes alphabetical. All right, So now your ischium. All right, it is composed of the ischial bone and the ramus. So there is a ramus there. It forms a C-shaped posterior inferior portion of the coxal bone. So now you're noticing that your coccyx is coming from two different sources. It's coming from your ilium and your ischium. Your ischial spine is going to project posteriorly and medially from the body, to which a ligament from the sacrum attaches. This is part of what makes your pelvis so stable. Your lesser sciatic notch is just inferior to the spine, and it provides a passageway for blood vessels and nerves. So now you've seen the sciatic twice in there. Okay? I wouldn't know where the sciatic runs. Anterior ischial ramus. So it forms a portion of your actual obturator foramen, and the ischial tuberosity is a prominent feature of the posterior inferior aspect of the ischium. It bears all the upper body's weight when seated. So your ischial tuberosity, when you are seated, this is actually what is hitting the chair. Okay? If you are riding a bicycle, okay, and you are sitting on the seat, if you are on a mountain bike, this is what is supporting your weight. If you are on a road bike, like what I ride, you have a combination of the ischial tuberosity and the pubis that's supporting your weight, because we're so far forward when we lean over. Okay? So as you rotate, things change position. Keep that in mind. Okay?
I have a bike here.
Specialized. So, all right. Of course, I don't ride anymore because I teach this bike. All right. Okay. I ride pedal bikes.
Oh, okay. I don't know what you're riding then.
Like Tour de France. Okay. So pubis, the smallest coxal bone. So in this case, the pubis. The pubis is usually what you don't feel a lot of, okay? And part of the reason why is because there's a lot of tissue there. In men, that is where all of our piping is. It is covering this region, okay? In females, you tend to have the mons pubis, which covers a lot of this region. You can feel it more in a female than you can in a male. You just have to, in a male, dig around a little more. The superior pubic ramus, it is going to contribute to the acetabulum structure, and your pubic bone and inferior pubic ramus form parts of the boundary of the obturator foramen. The pubic symphysis, joint where two pubic bones are separated by a fibrocartilage pad. I talked about this. This is the one the hormone relaxing comes in and actually allows to for that movement of the two pubic bones. The pubic arch is the angle formed by the two pubic bodies. It differs in gender. As part of the reason how you can tell the difference between the male and female pubis when it's disarticulated. All right, see the bone. Okay, you should know that this is where you are inserting your femur, okay? All right, see, you also are going to have your ischial tuberosity, your ischial ramus, you are going to have your inferior pubic ramus, your obturator foramen, your pubis, your pubic body. And these two are the alphabet soups, okay? Your iliac crest, you should know. Inferior gluteal line, that one is really hard to see, especially in the cast models. It doesn't always come out. Okay? Let's see. And your anterior gluteal line, same thing. It usually doesn't come out in the cast models that we have. So where you will probably see that is on Steve. Posterior gluteal line, another one that just doesn't always come out. All right, so
Are you using Steve for that?
I don't really like to use Steve at all, mainly because Steve is real and people tend to want to touch Steve, and that ruins Steve. So, I tend not to use him just because I don't want to mess him up.
Another question on this, you said that the rest is alphabet soup, so the things that you touched on, are, I mean, are we really supposed to be focusing on?
There were two that were alphabet soup.
Oh.
These two. Okay, so there's, when you start getting into anterior, superior, anterior, inferior, well, yes, they are important, okay, and you should probably know them. I tend not to put something that it's even hard for me to pronounce on a test like that, because, yeah, just, there's more than enough everywhere else. Because I expect you to know things like the acetabulum, what makes up the acetabulum, what three bones, what is your obturator foramen? Where is it? Okay. Where is your iliac crest?
Thank you.
Okay. So that's generally where I want you to stay. Your ischial tuberosity. Okay. Understanding where your ischial ramus is. Okay. Good with that? Okay. All right. So male and female pelvis. The male pelvis tends to be more narrow. Okay. You also tend to notice that there is going to be a more acute angle in the male pelvis here between your two pubis. In the female, there's also a slight rotation. If you notice that there's a larger gap between the coccyx and the pubic symphysis, okay, there's a little bit more of a rotation. The female pubis tends to be rotated more anteriorly, okay, decreasing the angle. All right, so with that being said, when I brought up, I think it was last week, I brought up the study about men preferring hip sizes. This is part of the reason why. If you have a more open birth canal, it's more likely that the child will survive, it's more likely that the child has survived. So it may be something that's a survival mechanism. That study was done probably about 10 years ago. So I haven't seen any follow-up study to that. It may be out there, I just haven't looked. Okay? All right.
So is it really like the wideness of like wider hips? Because basically—
it's a specific range.
It's pretty much all within a specific range, right? It doesn't go much more bigger than—
there's a certain point where it's too much.
Maybe it's not the hip size itself, but what's padding the hips?
It might be, but they found that there was a preferential size. I think they were measuring iliac crest, if I remember correctly. So that's what they determined.
Pretty neat.
It is.
That they could like instinctively have a preference for something that's kind of wrapped. Issue.
Yeah, it's interesting to think about because, yeah, you really don't think that we are as smart as we are. All right, so the femur, it is the largest and strongest bone of the body. It is the only bone in the thigh, so it's the only one that is supporting all of your weight and all of the motion that you have. When you take and you go down into a squat, okay, as you go down into a squat, it's taking all of that load from your torso and it is holding it in position. You are putting a lot of torque on that bone, so that bone tends to be fairly stout. A femoral break is one of the highest pounds per square inch breaks that you can have in the body, okay, because of how stout it is. If you have a femoral break, you got hit hard, whatever it was. Usually your femoral breaks only happen in car accidents that I know of, and high impact, okay? Your proximal epiphyses features a prominent spherical head and that's going to articulate the acetabulum of the hip joint. So the greater trochanter and lesser trochanter, they are very distinct, okay? you have this large protuberance that is going to be found lateral to the neck. This is your greater trochanter. The head of your femur is odd. It is one of the few. It will hook over this direction. Okay? And then you're going to have your greater tuberosity and your lesser tuberosity. Okay? All right. So your linea aspera, so this is a prominent line found running down the posterior shaft. Okay, so it's running down the posterior shaft, so behind. Okay, linea stands for line. Aspera, well, that's its name. Medial and lateral condyle. These are gonna articulate with your tibia at the knee joint. And your intercondylar fossa, it is going to be the indentation between these two condyles. It is a smooth anterior surface that is called the patellar surface. Okay? Where your patella is going to actually slide across. So, I'm going to skip that and show you here. Alright. So, like I said, it's the only bone where you're really going to have this hook. Okay, you have the head of your femur. 5 minutes over. So I'll cover this real quick and then we'll go to break. So you actually are going to have the head of your femur, which is crooked. You have your greater and lesser trochanter directly there. Okay, you are going to have the linea aspera. This is a fairly definitive line, even in the cast models. Okay. You have your gluteal tuberosities. These are also something you can usually find. This is where your gluteus muscles are going to insert. It's what allows you to do that. Okay, if you can't see what I just did because it's behind everything like that. Okay, so, all right, you are going to have your medial condyle, which is going to be medial and anatomical position. And then you're going to have your lateral condyle. These are epicondyles in this case. So, you have an epicondyle on the outside, you have a lateral condyle, a medial epicondyle, okay?
Is it condyles?
Yes, it is. So, it's hard to keep straight, keep that in mind.
What's the difference between an epicondyle and a condyle? Is it because one looks like it has cartilage?
Epi is because it's above the condyle itself.
Okay.
So, it's above it in anatomical position. That's where it gets the epi from.
I'm sorry, so no.
I'm not usually mean like that.
But I can.
Yeah, that's. I'm going to go back to that. Okay. But the patellar, I usually don't ask you which one's left and which one's right. But I will ask you what attaches to where. So, you need to know orientation. Okay, we'll talk about that in a little bit. Alright, so you do in this case have your patellar surface, and in this case you will have your patellar groove. This is where your patella will slide back and forth. Alright, so in this case you do have on the back side of the patella, which, let's just say the patella perhaps will break. You'll go to break, come back, and then I'll see y'all in 10 minutes.
So if you have knee replacement surgery, what they're replacing is actually the patella?
Not always. It depends. They're more than likely going to...